Previously on Sonic Weekly.
Okay, here's my question, Barry. What happened to all those rings from earlier? It seemed like we were setting something up.
Oh, setting something up, are we? Well, let me just reopen some ring portals. Wow, listen to that. Now, if we jump through the correct one, we just might appear on another podcast.
I don't know. I can see the logo in the distance through the travel ring.
As we enter through the ring,
yeah.
I have to tell you one very important thing.
Okay, I can't wait to hear that.
That's it.
Let's get scratching.
We got an explosive broadcast coming to you. Listen up. Sega games, just keep playing them.
Sega!
We're back. It's the Sega-Bit Swing Report Show. Live.
Get ready for Sega interviews and news.
I stand still alone that.
We are going to be on camera, so I hope that's okay.
Very cool.
Oh.
Very cool.
Okay, good, good. I knew David was covered in mud earlier.
I was.
In the episode, the one where we didn't see you all. But yeah. I think we've made it through the portal, and I think Mr. Doug Walker himself, Channel Awesome, is going to be... No, he's not here, but this is the extent of the crossover. And I think that's the extent of the role-playing until maybe at the end we'll tie into a part three. You know, you never know.
You said, Barry.
Yeah.
You said you had something to say.
Well, that was it. That we're going to be on camera.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. So we were existing in the world without cameras before.
Right. This is the third dimension. You existed in the audio dimension.
I see.
But, so this is the Sega-Bit Swing and Report Show. Live, there it is, and part two of a Sonic Weekly spectacular, really. This is the DCX Sonic of fandom. Everyone's talking about. There's rivalries, there's...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I guess that's about it. But on this Sega-Bit Swing and Report show, we are going to be talking about the, in my opinion, best Sonic the Hedgehog podcast out there, Sonic Weekly. We're going to talk about how it came to be, who are the hosts of it, and then we're going to jump into a ring portal for a little mid-canon discussion, and then towards the end, we're going to take some listener questions or viewer questions. So if you are in the chat over there, leave those questions or talking points. We'll get to them towards the end. So let's kick things off. So Sonic Weekly, when did that start? When was the first episode?
All right, I remember this one. This was early 2023. We started broadcasting Sonic Weekly, and it's been almost every week since.
We have not missed many weeks. We have gone on a hiatus, I think, two times, maybe three times.
Yeah.
Not entirely sure, because we're on season four. I've been doing podcasts for a while, and then Bo and David and I have known each other through message boards and Sonic message boards, and Bo and David were both becoming part of the previous Sonic podcast that I was doing, which was the GHZ podcast, and then it was like, well, that was on like an irregular schedule. It was very difficult to like get everybody in the same time zone or like arranged at the same time. And there was also just like this emerging thing that I was talking about with David of like, what if there was Sonic Retro, but for fans and all of the like minutia, tiny, blobby, stupid stuff. Basically, what if we did a weekly show? Because we were kind of starting to do that already. But it's just like, well, let's just have the title of the show be like our mission statement, which is like, each week we'll talk about Sonic. And that will be what we'll try to do. And that's what we have mostly done.
So,
right. Yeah.
I know this is part two, but we'll do the introductions again. We have Grant, we have David, and we have Bo. And you know, I feel like a lot of people kind of see Grant as the ringleader. They see Bo as the brains. And then they see
Donatello, yeah.
David as the party guy, right? Pretty much.
Right.
Right. No. The expert in all things Sonic lore behind the scenes and within the games themselves. So with that mix, did you just all see yourselves as kind of gelling as a trio of co-hosts, or like how did that come about? Was it the three of you from the very beginning?
Sonic Weekly was us three, right? And I would say this is a pandemic project, right?
Like, that's what I figured.
I had not been thinking about Sonic regularly for like 15 years, but you know, you get a year into not going anywhere and you're thinking, you know, what are my teenage message board friends doing? And turns out we're still talking about Sonic. And so, I mean, we were on voice chat talking about this stuff every night for a year. And, you know, we don't want to let that go. Let's do the same thing, but this time we're going to hit record.
So, and was there any thought, too, about, like, where you all are coming from? Because I feel like there aren't a lot of podcasts out there where it's Sonic fans specifically of a certain demographic age-wise. And, you know, like, and I fall into that, too. I feel like there's a lot of YouTubers out there. There's a lot of, like, reactors. And they're getting a lot of attention, but they're not appealing to certain demographics of fandom. Were you at all aware of that when you were putting the show together or as you were beginning the show?
I don't think so. No. No, I think it just sort of naturally came about where we're just like, yeah, you know, like we are talking, like Grant said, we, you know, Bo and I had been on a couple episodes of the previous GHZ podcast. And it just felt like, you know, we could keep doing this. We want to do it. We're doing it weekly, or we can do it weekly. It was just we were having fun being able to talk to each other about Sonic. And like, you know, I've been aware of the greater Sonicverse, Sonic fanverse, the YouTube sphere. I've definitely, you know, interacted and engaged with some of them. You know, I've been friends with some of them, but I never really thought about like, oh, you know, I might be a decade older than some of these people. 'Cause in my mind, there's like kids, 20 somethings, and Eggman age. Like that's kind of what I think about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
well,
I
mean,
yeah, I mean, I guess,
oh, go on.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe we do fill a niche where it's like, oh, we've been Sonic fans since essentially the beginning. We were kids when Sonic was new. And I know a lot of the tubers, a lot of the Sonic tubers out there, it does feel like they might've gotten started in the Dreamcast or the GameCube era. So, you know, they definitely do look at things a little bit different because their nostalgia is based in when 3D was king and before our nostalgia became their other nostalgia or whatever. I don't know. What are the layers? Go on, Grant.
I think also that it's not just that we're of a certain age and that we knew each other. I think we do have a pretty shared sensibility with, you know, some differences in opinion, obviously, and different perspectives, but we have an appreciation for the developers and like the stories behind the games and the people that are making the games, as well as interested in the lore, the timeline, the comics, like all the different spin-off media. And like, I think we have like a pretty like, not cavalier, but like, and not too positive, but also not too negative and not too like, sort of like, oh, it has to be the classic games or nothing else. Like we can kind of go along the ride. And I think Frontiers, to be honest, which was the first game that we covered together on Sonic Weekly, was the DLC. But even reviewing the game and just sort of talking about Frontiers in particular, because that was like one where like you kind of had to like look through the flaws. It would be like, oh yeah, this is pretty good. This is a pretty good game. But it's also a lot of stupid crap. And Bo had found a way to put it really well, which is like, you know, it's just all these different things and they shouldn't work together, but somehow they do work together. And anyway, talking about that in the release of DLC, I think that, you know, it was sort of a happy accident, but I think it's also like it was meant to be.
Yeah. Nice. So doing it weekly, you don't have any other, I guess, social medias or news sites that you work on outside of within Sonic fandom or within Sega fandom, aside from, I would say, maybe like Bo here below me, below me. And so what is that like, juggling the two? Like, do you see the Saturn sort of stuff as a completely different side of your fandom, or how do you find the time to essentially parent and dig through video games and talk about Sonic weekly, Bo?
Yeah, you know, there's time for all the things you can make time for, and I choose to make time for talking about Sonic an hour a week, and also spend every waking moment that's not with my family, like pouring through old game source code, and nothing else in my life.
You have a background in that, though. You must, right? Because it seems like you're very skilled.
Yeah. So for the people who don't know, I run a blog called Rings of Saturn, and I started it thinking, okay, I'm going to share my little ROM hacks that I'm doing for myself in Sonic Jam and Sonic 3D Blast and Nights into Dreams and especially Burning Rangers. Like, those four games, I know how to hack those pretty well. I'm just going to put up some videos of the fun things I do. But then somebody asked me, like, hey, have you looked at Bug for hidden stuff? And, okay, well, I can check out Bug. And then somebody said Clockwork Knight. And so I looked at Clockwork Knight. And so, like, a couple hundred games later, now I've got, like, stuff out here every week for all sorts of old systems.
Wow. Well, that's great.
Really,
and I mean,
you're
doing a service too for fandom. And I've also noticed that especially websites like Time Extension are using them to meet their quota for retro game articles because it's always new content for them. And I mean, I don't blame them because a lot of the stuff you're posting hasn't been found before.
Can you speak at all
to the fact that even though you're not like interviewing the developers, do you ever kind of get a sense that you're connecting to the developers across time just because you're finding all of these strange things within the code?
Absolutely. So like Nights into Dreams, especially, you can tell which code is written by Naka because it's crazy. Like, there's self-modifying assembly code, which only he could have written. And when I found that and understood what it was, I felt like I was seeing the curvature of the earth. you know, there have been a few instances where I have connected with the developers of the games where I found something. And so a recent example is the classic shooting game for Saturn called Radiant Silvergun. And I found a bizarre Easter egg in this game where you've got to jump through all these hoops and then get a certain score and then enter your initials as a certain string of letters, and then that unlocks this invincibility mode that had never been seen before. There's no other way to do it. And so I posted this and then got in touch with the Japanese developer who put it in, and over the internet he said, oh, I forgot that I did this, but I'm so happy that people are still playing this game and still connecting with it. This is really cool. So yeah, I've made a couple of those connections. And even more recently, I don't know if people know about this, but I found this bizarre screen in a PlayStation game that's adapting E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the movie. This is from 2002, so this is like 20 years after the fact. And inside of that game, there's a hidden screen that has a curse word and then refers to Osama bin Laden, the terrorist mastermind behind 9/11. And I thought, this is like maybe the strangest image I've ever seen in a game, or maybe just the strangest image ever. But I sort of worried about, like, okay, if I publish this, is somebody going to get in trouble? So I like sought out the developers and sent them a message, and they both ended up getting it back to me, the two people responsible for it. And they were just like, haha, that was funny. So I felt good about posting it. But then one of them said, hey, did you look at our other game we did, Knockout Kings, and find the nude code in there? I was like, whoa, no, I didn't.
Oh my
God. But now I will.
That's amazing. Have you ever considered like checking out other platforms like the Philips CDI or anything like that?
Oh man, I wish I could get the CDI working on my machine. Like the emulation scene for the CDI is pretty rough.
Yeah.
I do have a little bit of an affection for the 3DO just because it's so bad and nobody likes it. You know, I've never seen one. I've never picked up a 3DO controller, but you know, I've found several hidden things in 3DO games at this point.
That's awesome. So people can check that out at 32bits.substack.com. They can subscribe and get the newsletter and their emails. Now I wanted to talk to Grant, shine the spotlight on you. So you, within the Sonic community, you've done some stuff behind the scenes. Do you want to speak to any of that?
Sure. Yeah, I had the opportunity to contribute to the Sonic the Hedgehog social accounts, the Sega version of the Sonic the Hedgehog social accounts, during the Year of Shadow campaign. Long story short, the social media team, Katie, Justin, and Kenneth, we started working together, and then they hired my agency or my firm. I hired a couple of friends, including frequent guest on our show, Michael Stearns, to help design and create posts for the Year of Shadow, mostly the meme stuff. But we also did, I also produced the takeover, where the voice actors came in and answered the questions from X and TikTok and YouTube and so forth. And that was pretty fun. It was a tough thing to produce because there's a lot of moving parts. There's a sort of a big production, bigger than you might think. But that was really fun and rewarding. And we got a little bit of Webby Award recognition. Help, obviously they won for the animation for the Dark Beginnings, but they also got a nod for...
Sorry, our they also audience got a nod... just woke up.
Yeah, they also got a nod for Best Overall Social, which we feel, you know, some pride in because we were definitely part of the overall social and we helped that. But that is no longer continuing. I'm working for other clients now, but I'm certainly happy to have served Sega, and certainly during the Year of Shadow, and also that I got to begin in time to recognize the birthday of Knuckles in February, his 30th anniversary last year, 2020.
Were you there for his birth too? Did you see him emerge from his egg?
No, I do remember meeting Knuckles in that strategy guide, the one with the yellow cover, the Sonic strategy guide.
Nice. David, we're going to shine the spotlight on you now. I think a lot of people know, or maybe some people, or maybe no people know what connections you have within Sonic fandom. You're actually a shadowy and mysterious figure pulling the strings behind the scenes.
I've been on this show before, and I'm sure I've talked a bit about me in that context,
for
but,
sure.
You know, I've been a Sonic fan all my life. I've been hiding about the Sonic internet fandom since 97, I guess. Not that I was doing much back then. I was a child doing child things, as a child tends to do. But you know, I am part of Sonic Retro. I've written things for the front page. I used to write like feature articles on there back when the front page was a thing. You know, it exists, but the news feed of the site is sort of dormant at the moment. It's more about the wiki, it's more about the community, but I'm still, you know, a part of it, still helping to run Retro, you know. And I guess, you know, what, once upon a time I helped the Sega socials do one thing. I did the big Fishing Adventure 3 : the trial, which did exist on the old Twitter, which is a saga, Barry, you and I have talked about, I think, on this show before.
Yes.
It's not like it, you know, we don't have to get into the nitty gritty of all that, but it's there. And, you know, Also, once upon a time, I was on the Opinion Zone, which was the Sonic show podcast spinoff that back when Jamie Eggman was still running it. So I was on his show until that show went on pretty much an indefinite hiatus. And then I was podcast free until Grant roped me in. So weekly's the main thing, but I'm also, FTCR, Find the Computer Room, the YouTube conglomerate. Can we call it that? I don't know. When we remember it exists and we put up a video, I'm over there. So, you know, I'm hiding out. I do whatever. I think about Sonic. I've thought about Sonic way too long. Unlike Grant and Bo, I can't really say that I dipped out of Sonic for too long. There was a period of about like 2-3 years where I didn't buy the games, but I was still reading about it and looking on the message boards and going, oh, I can't believe Sonic's so bad right now. But I still paid attention. I never really stopped, which I don't know if that's a medical condition I should look into, but
yeah. I stopped from 2004 to 2007, which I feel like is the best time to stop. Like, if you're going to take a 4-year break from Sonic, that one or the Boom era, I would say, where it's like Lost World, the Boom games, like that would have been a good time to dip out for about 4 years too. Maybe go to jail for a bit or something, you know.
Mr. Barry, may I ask you a question? The assembled a question. Do you see yourself ever having a Sonic dip again? Where you will, or are we all way too invested now?
The Sonic.
I mean, I look at your background and think it would be impossible, but maybe.
I have thought about that, like in the future, like when I'm like, I'm over Sonic, I gotta sell this shit, you know. but I feel like I'm too. I don't want to say headstrong. I'm too like, what's the word? I won't do things just out of spite. like I do this show. I did this show for a while just out of spite because there was another podcast saying they were the longest running Sonic or Sega podcast. And I looked at it and I'm like, no, we are. But then I'm like, this show stops, they will be. So I kept doing this show and now I'm doing it a bit more regularly now. But this was a spite show for a while, I will admit. You can watch those spite episodes. They're not that bad. There's a few that are just like, man. But yeah, comes down to the series. Like if the series goes, I don't know, like if they do a complete reboot and they give the characters completely different looks and it just does not click with me. A great example would be Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the most recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Those just did not click with me. And I've never been like a hardcore Ninja Turtles fan, but I definitely was into it in the 80s and I got back into it with the 2012 series, but then they lost me again. So thankfully Sonic's actually pretty consistent, at least since I gotta say maybe 2008. Like the mere fact that they're using renders from that for like a 2024 IHOP promotion says something about the it's not even the staying power, it's just like the brand consistency. And I know some fans are like, oh man, this render's older than I am, why is this, you know, being used on merch? But I'll be honest, like I'm glad that Sonic has maintained a look, even though his voice might change, even though the writing might change, the gameplay might change. I'm glad that Sonic himself has remained largely consistent since at least 2007. And I don't know, I feel like we're too far out now for a shakeup, because they might ruin everything and then people will stop playing the games. But the movies are really a shakeup, the fact that they've given us such a different take on Sonic. And I think that's the way to do it, is to introduce new media, introduce like a new TV show or a movie like Sonic Prime or the Sonic movies, but keep the video game outside of doing little tweaks to the model. Don't go crazy anymore. Like I don't think the series needs that, unless someone disagrees here.
Once I saw a video about someone who wanted to redesign Sonic and just make his face all blue, and he wore a backpack.
Yes,
you know.
Oh my god. That tells you everything you need to know. Yeah, that was terrible. Oh my god, that was bad. Right. But hey,
well, it wasn't Sonic. I don't know if it was bad if you're thinking, oh, this is Sonic. If it's not Sonic, yeah, maybe it's not that bad. But it just wasn't Sonic.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. Either way, oh god, what?
What is this? Oh my god. I think it's
is this
ring.
The link to your? Is this the link to your Spite playlist?
No. This is actually going
to
take
maybe it's back to our show.
This is going to take us to another segment now. So now we're going to be talking a little bit about canon within the Sonic racing games. And by that, I mean specifically Team Sonic Racing and Sonic Racing Cross Worlds. Of course, in the past, we had Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing, and we had Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. But those had other Sega characters. Those didn't really have any story mode. Transform did have a comic book, which was in, quote, another time and another place, where a lot of the Archie video game comic books like to exist. But there are elements of those games that have kind of seeped into Team Sonic Racing and Cross Worlds. So, for example, we had the Sonic's car, Tails' car, like all of their vehicles kind of made the transition with slight redesigns. Some of the tracks in Sonic and Sega All-Stars Racing made their return in Team Sonic Racing. I didn't even remember this, but I played Team Sonic Racing for about 30 minutes yesterday just to get a refresher. And I'm like, wow, they're dipping into some 2010 era nostalgia here. Like, this is kind of cool. But David, I have to ask you, with the canon, where do you see these first two racing games existing, if anywhere? Or are they purely video games with no connection to the canon as a whole? And don't give me that everything is canon nonsense, because not everything is canon.
Not everything. Well, everything is canon to something, even if it's not canon to itself.
That's
or
true.
To other things.
All right, you win.
So, right, you mean like, so the, when you say the first two, you mean the All-Stars
Super
Racing
ones.
Games?
Yeah, yes, the Transformed, and then the one prior to it from Sumo.
Right, which was just also, right, because you started talking about Team Sonic Racing and then I got confused. Okay, yeah. To me, the way I think about those games is that I don't think they're canon to the Sonic universe. I think they're canon to, like, that sort of world in a world. You know, like, Sega Gaga, which is, hey, Sega is a video game company. And Sonic exists, and Alex Kidd exists, but they're kind of like actors. Sort of the Roger Rabbit thing. So to me, that's what I think of it as. That those games take place in a world where Sonic does exist, and the video games exist, but he's sort of an actor in it. Which could also mean that Eggman is villainous and does villainous things, but he also plays himself. It's where the lines blur, kind of like with... Yeah, I mean, you know, Disney, whenever they go, oh, here's Mickey Mouse as a character. You know, you have House of Mouse, where Mickey Mouse is an actor, and he runs a club. And sometimes Jafar goes to the club. But then there's the special where they're all villains and try to do villainous things, even though really they're just actors playing villains, but they're also villains. And then your mind explodes. That's how I look at those first two games. It's something weird like that.
Yeah.
Where you can't really say, oh, this is between, you know, like, this is between Lost World and Forces. But it is, like, maybe it's the thing Sonic did for fun between filming those two games.
Wouldn't it be fun if, like, in the Sonic Frontiers sequel or follow-up, you know, it's like, Sage, I haven't seen you since we were driving together here on Kronos Island. That's great. Like, if they directly referenced the kart racing games, that would be fun.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I feel like the comics are probably the next place we're going to be seeing, like, Cross Worlds referenced. It's kind of ironic or funny, whatever the word is, the fact that we have a Chaotix comic book coming out, and it takes place in a museum, but it's not Wonder Museum. It's like a museum they made specifically for the comic. And I feel like that was such a wasted opportunity for a Cross Worlds crossover. But now we have a mall. We have... a museum. I mean, we have some very pedestrian places now made canon. And Worth noting too that Colorful Mall is the track. They have bathroom signs, and I feel like that is the first time a restroom has been mentioned within canon.
No? Sonic Adventure.
Oh, that's correct. There's... Are there toilets?
Hot Shelter, yeah.
Does Sonic use it?
He doesn't use it, but he can go in.
They're for humans, though.
Oh,
but
no.
That's true. Okay.
Gamma can go in.
There are toilets. Yeah. You can... Okay, good. Good. So Sonic can pee. That's good to know. So
we get to see Sonic shower in that game, but we don't get to see him go one or number one or two.
Damn.
I guess I like the phrasing, we don't get to.
We don't get to. Look what they took from us.
We don't get to see Sonic go to the bathroom. I guess that's true.
But then in the context of these two racing games, then Sonic has his car. Are we to presume that this is a Dodonpa creation, a Tails creation? It does exist in the comics quite a bit, both in Archie and I think IDW, as sort of just like Sonic's car. But I don't recall any like explanation within the games itself as to how they got these vehicles. Unless I'm missing.
I like to
something.
Think they found a good lease program.
Yeah, they're leasing.
You know, that they're yeah, I think they're leasing. I don't think they own. Maybe it's lease to own. But I think they just you know. Want to try it out a little bit.
And Progressive is their auto insurance?
Yes, that's right. And Honey Nut Cheerios is the cereal of choice.
That's true. And I think that's kind of dipping back into the Sonic as an actor world, where he's appearing in commercials and he's doing... And, you know, you've actually...
Wreck-It Ralph.
Grant, you've worked with the Sonic of the actor world because he's done the takeovers. And
yes, and, you know... not to brag, but he did, because I stocked bananas for the actors to have as like a snack, you know, at the craft table, in his Sonic voice, he was like, "Go off, King." And I was like, "Oh, that's nice." because he had a banana, but you know, it was a Sonic voice directed at me. I was mostly trying to be seen, not heard, not really, you know, be a part of it other than producing it.
But you've existed now in canon.
I've existed now. Yeah, that extension of the voice towards me canonizes me in as much as anything would. As much as, like, my avatar in Forces is canonized. Buddy.
That's true. Yeah. Now, another thing is these ring portals, and I'm not talking about the ones in our you know, fictional crossover here, but, like, the actual rings opening up and going into them, that feels like very much an invention of the movies, is it not? I mean, I know
definitely.
Have the special stages...
But being able to see through them specifically, I think, is something that was taken from the movie. And I like it. I think it's a nice visual enhancement to what you saw in Sonic 1, Sonic 3.
Yeah, and we've also had... do you remember... Where else have they had the portals? Was it in... Generations, just recently. They actually brought one movies within the game.
Oh, and Sonic Jam, of course, too.
That's true.
Jump through to get to the credits.
That's true. Right. And then we've had
Sonic 3D
effect.
Blast.
Oh, yeah. Where you go in with the... they're sideways, though, right?
Yeah, they are.
And you go...
You kind of do a dunk on them. Yeah,
you do a dunk. And there's like a little place to hold them, too.
Yeah.
Now, Archie, they had warp rings for a while, right? Like, in the tail end of Ian Flynn pre Genesis Wave, wasn't it like, we have the giant rings we can travel through? I feel like that was a thing, right? I know in Fleetway they had the lampposts,
right?
But in Archie, I think they adopted the rings as a means to transport places, and that's why. All of the echidnas vanished because Thrash, in between issues, when everyone was unconscious, threw every echidna into a giant ring. And he was like, yep, I did that. Now we won't get sued. And it's like, oh, yeah, I guess not. Don't worry about that. I don't know how you throw everyone in, but...
It's difficult to adapt the rings to other media because they are such a game mechanic. And, you know, Archie had kind of the goofy issue where Sonic has a billion rings, but, you know, what's the point of the rings? I think the Saturday Morning Show did it nicely, where you get one ring and then you use it to power up, but you have a very limited supply of them. That was nice. But the movies, I think, okay, we can use this to go anywhere. That's what you want. That's going to unconstrain you in your storytelling.
Right.
I think movies are the best use of the rings and the best justification for the rings. They work as well, you know, kind of for the games. You want more rings to give you more options of places to warp to in case you almost die by getting crushed by a block or something.
But Sonic he has a finite amount in his bag. And especially right. In the first movie, he's very like Leprechaun about them. My rings, where's me rings? You know, like,
yeah,
he's like movie kind of obsessed with having them. And when he drops them, he's like trying to scramble and get them all. It's, I don't know. It's a little unsettling.
I'm glad he seems to have more though. Now he's like willing to use them for a vacation. He's willing to be a little more free with them. And in my head, it's just like Tails says, oh, I got to set him up. Don't worry.
Oh,
right. I mean, that makes sense because Tails had to use them to get to Sonic. But the vacation was before he met Tails. So I'm assuming at that point, Sonic's like, well, I don't need these to run away. I don't need them to escape. Before it was like, I have a finite amount and I got to save them in case somebody wants to kidnap me, dissect me, use me to take over the world. Now he's like, nah, it's fine. But yeah, you're right. Now with Tails and also Knuckles, they must know where to get more, especially if it is the way that all advanced civilizations transport themselves in the universe.
I hope they still come out of lakes like in Saturday.
That would be great. Maybe they do. They float to the top.
I mean, even Gunn has access to rings. We saw it in the Knuckles show. The angry, evil Gunn agents just had one. Kicked a person into the mushroom world. Why the mushroom world? I don't know. They could have kicked them like directly into the sun if they wanted to, but they were like, "No, you're gonna hang out with mushrooms for the rest of your life."
And they knew about the mushroom planet. They envisioned it and they sent them to it. So
yeah, I don't know why.
There's rules to where you can travel though, right? You can't teleport into the secure base in movie 3.
Because you don't know what it looks like. You have to visualize it in your mind. But you can also be told about it. Because clearly that guy didn't go to the mushroom planet before. So he's thinking about the mushroom planet. And then he throws it. Maybe he watched some video of Eggman. I don't know. Like Robotnik.
Right. Maybe when Eggman got sent to the mushroom planet at the end of 1, somebody took a picture of the portal. So everyone just goes to that one spot. They're just sitting at Eggman's, you know, discarded mushroom coffee. It's very unfortunate.
Right. And so
listeners to Sonic Weekly know that I am partial to the idea that Sonic Adventure taught us that nothing is really fixed. There are differing perspectives on the same events, and everybody remembers things in a way that makes them look good. So, you know, did they really kick him through the mushroom planet in a ring portal? Yeah, maybe. That's a cool story. It's a good way to dispatch your enemy. But would everyone remember it that way? Who can say?
That's a good point. And another good point is the fact that we have Minecraft now in a canon game, and the ring portals can not only send you to places within Sonic's world, which I should note, apparently there's time and space going on here too, at least in, I think, the theme song, the future and the past, though they don't really play that up too much. I feel like maybe the North Star Islands might be the past, or it could just be existing in the present.
The dinosaur is the big thing of the past.
That's
it's
the
in
thing
the key
of the past. Isn't it past in the Riders games?
Well, it's coming from Secret Rings, I think.
Oh, is that from
Secret
Rings?
Which is actually a fictional storybook, so it's not really the past so much as it is an old story.
That's true.
Dinosaurs are things of the past. I guess. Maybe. We don't know. Dulcie.
Well, generally.
How is Dulcie?
Dulcie.
Right. I haven't met any dinosaurs in real life, but I haven't watched the latest Jurassic Park, so I don't know. Right, but in the game, doesn't Sonic make a comment that makes it sound like that the worlds you're going to in Cross Worlds aren't real, but they're like constructs made by Dodonpa that you're racing through based on places they know?
Oh my god.
Right. But really? Dantha really did his research. He says that.
Yeah.
He says that about cyberspace.
Yeah. So it makes it sound like, oh, we're not in cyberspace, but you've recreated cyberspace using your technology. Frightening technology. And nobody there's no checks and balance system with the Danpa, unfortunately.
We see a bit of that too, because the weapon, the star that cuts your car in half, your car becomes digital when it breaks away, and then it reforms. Yeah. Which leads me to believe none of these cars or places are true reality. They're like these like hyper like real life holograms that we can touch and like drive in. Which is
rivals
just wild.
Have That's, a similar effect.
I'm surprised he hasn't turned evil, because it seems like he's got more of a handle on technology than like Robotnik does. Eggman Expo looks like a joke when you consider Dodonpa's entire race is an expo.
His whole planet is under his control and dedicated to automobile production and this race that might be all digital, like you're saying. We don't know.
I mean, I've been protesting Dodonpa for a few months now. They're doing one soon, I think.
But it's funny, the questions that you're asking about, like, you know, just like taking the things literal of like wondering. I mean, I know it's for comedy purposes, but also it's just funny to remember that like they don't necessarily have those answers. It's the thing of like who puts the air in the tires of the Batmobile. Nobody does. It's fictional. It's a car that's supposed to look cool on a page and on a screen.
I thought it was Harold.
And Harold died in Hush.
Didn't he come back to life? Never mind.
That's a good question. I don't know if he did. I genuinely don't know if Harold came back to life after Hush. But he... but anyway, that's a Grant Morrison quote. And I just think it's like with Sonic, I always like to... I love the interpretation that like he's... You know, because we all know that Sonic is real. Like in our real world. That's why the movies take place in Montana. Because Montana's in the real world. And Green Hills, Montana is a real place, and Sonic's a real person. And they all live in the Dreamcast together. And when they're not in the Dreamcast, it's sort of like Santa rules, where like they can kind of like go through the power lines and be on multiple screens at once, because he's electricity and he's wind at the same time. So Sonic is true and real, and you can't take it too seriously because it's magic.
Right, and you can't until you're Ian Flynn, and then you actually have to take it seriously when you're writing a four-issue arc where they go to Dodonpa's planet, and he's like, where is the planet located? How do they get there? Is it truly like a digital construct? All these wild things.
I do feel like that takes the fun out of it sometimes a little bit for me, which is like... I think it's more of like the impression of Ian that does that. I don't think Ian Flynn's writing actually is as pedantic as like his detractors will say they are, but it's the same thing with the rival interactions. Like I actually thought I was going to really dislike those in Cross Worlds, because it was like, oh, everybody's just going to be their one trait. Big is going to talk about Froggy and fishing. Let him develop a character, I thought. But it's ridiculous. That is his character. And when you see it in the instances that you're supposed to, when you're racing against him, it's a little bit of light comedy. It's a nice little reminder of who your number one rival is going to be. It's got to be somebody anyway.
Right.
So it's fun. I think the lore is fun, and maybe it has the right amount of depth. But yeah, what I actually miss is like, I mean, we talk about Archie all the time. I feel like Archie always inevitably comes up. But just, yeah, I miss that crazy, crazy world building. Because I feel like we don't get that as much with IDW and the Sega restrictions now. Like we just don't know. It's like humans. We were talking about this on part one of the show. Where's the humans at? How are the humans and Anthros and Chows? How do they all mix together? And that seems interesting. And it's nice that it's sort of like beside the point, like it is in Sonic Adventure, where Amy just, you know, lives in a human city and it's normal. I mean, they're kind of like celebrity figures, but that's kind of the aspect of the pointless lore that I'm curious about.
And we never met her human boyfriend in Sonic Adventure.
Does she have a roommate or like a landlord or
maybe?
What are some of her human relationships?
Right. We don't see these human animal hybrid creatures. So, you know, I like Bo's face there. That's more of a Ken Penders thing, actually. But it looks like we are going to enter another ring portal.
Okay.
Look at that. Let's go into it.
Good effect. Whoosh. I like it.
So this is the ask the audience and everything segment. So we have one question here. It's a little more behind the scenes, but and maybe this has been answered by Sonic Team themselves, but we can help them out here. So Tommy's asking, why does the DLC not have voice acting? Who can speak to that? Because there has been some answers out there for us.
Right. Did you just say money?
It's money. It's money.
Yeah.
The answer is money.
Yeah.
That's
case
right.
Closed.
I believe Azuka went on record to be like, to make things easier for the licensees, we figured if they didn't interact with the characters, then we wouldn't have to approve as much, wouldn't have to do as much back and forth. Of course, that only explains, like, the Paramount stuff, or Pac-Man, or Mega Man, or...
Right.
Mario. Mario's not in it. But that doesn't explain away the Sega side of things, but I think money is the real answer for all of it, and also for the Sega side, because they don't want to have to pay for, like a Dragon Man to try and comprehend Sonic the Hedgehog as existing. Because, right. In his world, Sonic is a video game. And then him realizing that he's with Sonic would make him question his own existence. And the entire plot of the Like a Dragon franchise is suddenly off the rails. Unless, of course, we are in the world of everyone's an actor. But I think the core of that game is this is just a Sonic thing happening in Sonic's world, even if there isn't a hardcore story around it.
Right.
Just allusions to one, like in the Tails tube and presumably the IDW comic that will come out one day.
And it does really complicate things once you get like a character like Joker in there, or Ichiban, where he's like, is he going to talk to every single other character? And then as these Sega DLC characters come out, are they going to talk to each other? And then then Ian Flynn is going to be like, oh my God, I got to think about what Knights would say to Joker. And he's like, they don't have any connection. So it would be I'm here. I'm from the dream world. And then he's like, I'm from an edgy, they don't even, it's too much.
I guess it's why after Brawl, they never had Solid Snake talk about anyone else. It was too much.
Right.
So I think maybe it's
the logistics of you got to book a recording studio for every single one of these actors and do all day recording and do alternate takes. It's just let's get the game out.
Right.
Isn't it funny the way that with the way that canon works, that you can have these characters in there, but these are events that maybe didn't happen to them? If you tried to say that about yourself, you would sound like an insane person. I went driving, but that wasn't me that did that. That doesn't count. Over a few people.
Could these be digital creations of Dodonpa?
I still think it is. It's the Sonic Adventure. I remember myself doing something awesome. And, you don't remember it that way? Well, I guess we're just going to have to beg to differ. Who won the fight? Sonic, Tails, or Gamma on the A-Carrier?
Well, Sonicu is weighing in. He says, clearly Dodonpa created the crossover characters after studying them, but didn't know what they sounded like, so he didn't want to take the chance on giving them the wrong voice.
That makes sense.
That's true. Plus, I think Knights should not speak after... I hate Knight's voice in tennis game.
Such a mistake.
And in the sequel.
Or in Journey of Dreams.
Or in Journey of Dreams, yeah. Both of them are just abysmal. We have a question here from G. Silverfish asking, which Crossworlds character is your rival and what is your dialogue with them? I will let Bo kick things off. Of all the characters, which is your rival?
I think this really is the next frontier in Crossworlds, is put yourself into it and take a nice snapshot of yourself. It's you driving the car, and then you can record your own interaction with Sage is my answer. I'm gonna pick Sage.
Wow. And what would you say to Sage to make her feel obsolete.
Sage, I'm glad you got a better ending in Frontiers in the third DLC, but I remember the first one. You did not survive, and that's how it's going to be for you in this race.
Whoa. Wow.
That's a deep cut.
Right.
How about you, David?
Oh, God. I don't
know. Dear father.
Dear father. Right. You know, my initial thought was just to be like, whoa, Sonic, you're real. I don't understand. And he's like, yeah, of course I am. Why wouldn't I be? And I'm like, well, okay, since I've got you here, when is your actual birthday? It's June 11th, right? And then, but, I mean, other than that, maybe I would just talk to Big about fishing. I guess everyone's rival in that game, so we would have to come up with dialogue for everyone.
Sounds like a lot of work. I don't think anyone's your rival because you love every Sonic character equally, correct?
That's right. Yes, yeah. There's no such thing as a bad character. Sometimes there could be bad writing, but never a bad character.
100%. Zaz agrees. How about you? How about you, Grant?
Well, I interpreted the question a little differently. So my rival is a DLC character called the Devil. And the Devil is my rival.
Wow.
And the dialogue that I have with the Devil is it depends. If you're playing as the Devil and I'm your rival, I'm like, not today, Satan, and I do like a finger wave. But if you're playing as me and my rival's the Devil, I go 666, more like suck, suck, sucks. That's you sucking down my dust because I'm going to get ahead of you in this race and come out number one.
Wow.
Semicolon. And in the end, I think you'll see that I'm the superior racer. M-dash. Unless you beat me, which I find unlikely. Period.
The devil went down to Dodonpa's world.
Man, you don't like the Devil, do you? Wow. Okay.
I'm calling out the Devil right here, right now. If the Devil wants to fight...
You know, it's controversial, but yeah, I don't like evil either. Especially the prince of all evil and darkness. I would say my rival would probably be the Joker character, just because, yeah.
Joker!
Ever since Sega bought Atlus, I always felt Atlus kind of being, like, there, and I really should pay more attention to it, but I'm already overwhelmed by, you know, like, over 60 years of Sega history in games, and I'm like, I really don't want another studio now. I have to imagine that's how hardcore Disney fans felt when they, like, acquired Marvel and Lucasfilm, and they're like, oh my god, am I a Star Wars and a Marvel fan now? Oh boy, I gotta take all this stuff in. And I honestly, I wish it was Joker from the DC universe. Like, I think that would be so much cooler, and people may scoff at it, but as evidenced by what I just picked up at Target today, you know, DC and Sonic canon, and I don't know why. And this actually brings up one of the questions here. I'll get into it in a second. But I don't know why Prime is in this game, a series that ended well over a year ago, if I'm not mistaken, and has not had any toys on the shelves outside of old stock at Walmart. And yet it's here in the game as DLC. And I don't mind it, but I feel like, where are the movie characters? Where are the DC Comics crossover characters?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly they can make deals with like SpongeBob and I mean, not like the actual real SpongeBob, but like the company that owns him.
Right.
I think SpongeBob in all.
Where are the characters? Like, where's Amy in her Wonder Woman outfit or something like that?
I think this game is going to have a very long tail, and all of these alternative skins are going to be in there, and it's going to be like the Forces mobile game. Like, they've got Antoine fighting Sonic Underground flunky bosses in there, and we don't know about it. We're not playing the mobile games.
Right, yeah. They do get a little crazy there. There is a question here from Sertu asking, how canon is Prime, or does it not matter? And I have a follow-up question too, but I want to hear your thoughts. Do you all see Prime as like main level canon?
My take is that Prime is to the current generation as Saturday Morning Show was to our generation. And I know that sounds heretical, but I have a 7-year-old who's right in the target demographic for Prime, and he loves it as much as I did the Saturday morning show. And, you know, is Saturday AM prime or canon? I don't know. Somebody's canon. Is prime canon? Same answer.
They're the prime demographic. Right? All right.
Exactly. No, I got what you were saying. It was a bit of a pun.
Yeah.
And a bit
no
of
one's
truth.
Laughing. I think some people's audio might have messed up. They didn't hear that part.
There's layers of canon. It's like an onion. It's a spectrum of canon. It's like the old Star Wars expanded universe, where it's like true. Some things are super, super canon that are absolutely, they happened in every story. And then there's other ones where it's like, yeah, maybe not. It kind of depends on your point of view.
Now, if they were of the Shatterverse, which has since been unshattered, how are they appearing through these, like, portals into Sonic's world? Or are these Dodonpa creations once again?
Oh, God. Right. Dodonpa is the only one who's aware of the events happening. He's like the monitor or
from What If, from Marvel, right?
Oh, right, the Watcher, yes. The Watcher from What If, he who sees all of existence and all of the multiverse or the Psycho Pirate from Crisis on Infinite Earths, who remembers the multiverse even though the rest of the DC universe didn't, until, of course, they all remembered it. But layers make sense, like, because I think of it, you know, there is game canon, and there's many layers of canon within the games itself, but then I guess below that is comic. And even further below that must be Prime, even though I think Prime doesn't work in the game universe for a variety of silly reasons. But it does feel like its own thing, and that's fine. But unless, I mean, they could have used this opportunity to have Sonic talk to Pirate Dreadknuckles and be like, "Oh, I thought that you disintegrated when I saved the world." And, he's like, "Arr, you matey, no, I went on a cool pirate ship and survived." And you know, he would lose his accent as it would go along. He wouldn't even sound like Knuckles anymore.
Well, and then you start getting into the whole, like, we would essentially having the game cast finally voicing their prime characters because they weren't allowed to. They were, unfortunately, replaced.
Not Canadian enough.
Yeah, yeah. One last thing I want to touch on, I guess this is the news portion. I won't bring the ring portal up again. Maybe I will. Here we go. Oh, look at that.
Whoa.
There we go.
You paid for that graphic. Whoa. You paid $25,000 for
I
that.
I did, actually. Yeah. So there was a recent interview with, the Jim Cummings show? He's the voice actor behind Shere Khan. And he's played Robotnik in, I believe, what was it, Underground?
No.
And he
it
had...
Sad AM.
Sad AM. Who was the Underground
one? Gary Chalk, the guy who Grounder in AOSTH.
And also appeared in the first Sonic movie as a government official. I'd vote for him.
He's the true crossworlds of the Sonic world.
Yeah, right. So they had a Sonic Adventure voice actor... blanking on his name at the moment. Ryan Drummond, yes. And he told his account of the whole replacement, his being replaced. And I'll bring it up here, but did you all see this? And what were your initial reactions to his retelling? Because I always like to learn about these things, but not when the facts are so wrong.
Yeah, I feel this same way as I do about Sonic Adventure. Like, he's got the way he remembers it. You click on him on the Choose Everybody screen, and you get one version of events. Then you play a big story, and it's totally different. So, yeah, glad to have the perspective. I don't know if it's consensus reality. It's sort of like Johnny Gioli and the authorship of Live and Learn. I love that he has... a memory of it where he's the hero of that story, but the copyright office doesn't agree.
Right. Well, I think I have the video here. Let me see if I can bring it up. But
we can watch it together like a family if you can do that.
Actually, Here, let me see. I think this is it. This might be it. All right, here we go. Let me get it in here. Sometimes it's a little tricky doing the video. Let me see if I can get the audio on. Oh, there we go. I just love how bad YouTube shorts are. Because of how they're trying to be like TikTok,
also,
but they won't just play.
They've gotten long, too. I was watching a YouTube short.
This
like
isn't even it.
It was like 2 minutes.
Look, they changed it. Ah, well. Anyway, I was going to bring the video up, but people can check it out, actually. It's on the Jim Cummings channel. But essentially, what he does is he walks through the series of events. He claims that Sonic X was brought over by this company called 4Kids, and then they reached out to Sega, and they're like, hey, we got your show. Do you want your video game actors in this show? And then they were like, use your guys, or you find some. And they're like, oh, okay. So they used their voice talent. And then they had two Sonics going on until it was decided, oh, why aren't we just using the Sonic X voice cast for the games? And then they gave Ryan the boot. But really, in my mind, what happened was Sega had already licensed it to 4Kids. Sega owned it. They knew they were bringing it to the West. 4Kids has a history of having their own voice cast do these things. They would never farm it out when they already have in-house talent. Same kind of goes for the Sonic Prime voice actors, who are Canadian, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a whole contractual issue there. And so it just, timeline-wise too, it just didn't really line up much for me. Like, I believe the only 2000, if I'm not mistaken, I think 2004 was like Sonic Battle. So it's like, he really wasn't doing much voice acting as Sonic after Heroes.
Right. Now, I mean, Heroes in the West was released in January. It was released in December in Japan.
And right.
It was released in January over here. So, yeah, and then Battle. And that, I think you might, I forget, I think you hear Ryan's voice in Advance 3, is it? But that might be just old sounds, not anything recorded specifically for that. Yeah, I do wonder, because it also feels like that's something that Sega would have had to... Whoever was trying to get the license for Sonic X, like, I don't know if 4Kids was the only party trying to get it, if there were
right.
other groups who wanted to get the license and dub it, but I'm sure the agreements as to, like, this is how much money is exchanging, and are there any clauses for, like, voice talent? It feels like it's something Sega would have said up top, like, oh... If we, like, we'll only sign you on if you use our voices. Otherwise, it feels like it's not something that they were too concerned about. I mean, they certainly weren't interested in, brand synergy when Sonic Underground was released at the same time as Sonic Adventure. They didn't
right.
say, oh, actually, you have to re-record everything with Ryan Drummond now. You have to fire Jaleel White, and we hope that Ryan... can sound like Sonya and Manic.
They're not paying attention to the other media at all.
Yeah, 1999 is such a strange year for Sonic, because you've got Sonic Adventure, Sonic Underground, and then Sonic the Hedgehog the movie, which is the OVA release, all in the same
right.
year. So that's three Sonic voice actors, three very different interpretations of Sonic.
Right, and you have to imagine,
all in his
too.
Big resurgent year.
People are telling him as he's doing the voice work for Sonic Adventure, I think there's a TV show coming out soon, so you might get that. Or it's like in the works. And he had no idea how far along it was, because obviously, like, animation, the whole process probably started 98 when he maybe was recording. So it's kind of like all these things are happening around the same time, and they just... couldn't line it up, and nor should they have, because Sonic Underground is really more of an extension of, like, a reboot of Sad AM. So
I don't really know what happened, but I mean, it's clear that just in across the industry, voice actors tend to be, you know, not treated all so great, not paid the best compared to actors in other mediums. So writers, actors, songwriters, it seems like there's a lot of different ways that you can get screwed out of what ends up being a huge contribution. That seems like, it's just a day of recording. How much is that? But it's like, well, it lives on. Right. And it has this such a huge, it casts such a huge shadow over your life and your career that you would think, oh, well, there's some, but it's probably, you know, it's like a day rate and, you know, probably, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Pay him all the money.
There's a whole, I'm sure someone could write a whole book on the voice actors of Sonic the Hedgehog. And the ups and downs, the fact that, Roger Craig Smith's are only two-term Sonic the Hedgehog voice actor because he, like, quit and then started again, but no one ever filled that void in between. Sonic just wasn't being voiced. That's a whole other, you know, situation that people, I feel, haven't really gotten into, but we don't really have to because he just kind of left and then came back, you know?
Right. So. It was a hiccup. It wasn't anything big. Of course, if you live in Japan, there's just been the one Sonic. It's just been Junichi this whole time. Like nobody's even having this conversation over there.
Right.
So
right.
Probably like to sake of Japan, they're just like, well, we have a Sonic. Like English Sonic isn't Sonic. It's our Sonic, Junichi, and he's been here since 1998. Like what else? Except, of course, for the movies. They have somebody else. But even Junichi is the one who's in, like, the Japanese dub of Sonic Prime. It's him. It's right. Just Sonic. So, you know.
Yeah. Wow, I wish I was Japanese. Maybe we should all move to Japan.
okay.
Speaking of moving, let's move on to the end of the show. We're not going to play some music just yet. I wanted to plug you all, first off. So here we have... at least on SegaBits.com, if you want to check out some more of the recent shows, and if you follow SegaBits primarily, and you're like, oh, I discovered this Sonic Weekly show, we do have it posted there when the videos come out. It also exists on, I do believe, Spotify. It exists
yes.
on several other YouTube. Podcatchers. I listen to it on Apple Podcasts, but it's everywhere and anywhere. There's no real website, but there are social media accounts. Where are you all most active when people want to, like, hear your musings, if any? Would you say X or Blue Sky?
I say send us an email, sonicweeklypodcast@gmail.com. We will tell you where to go.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly it. Is find the show, and then in the links... there's links in the description of each show that links to David's projects, Bo's projects, mine, Smoovie's, our mm-hmm. editor, Jack of Old Games, who does the gameplay footage. But start with the show. Yeah. Start with the show and start with the most recent show. Or start from the beginning. I don't know. Do whatever you want to do.
Right. You know, right. And if you are part of the Android faithful, we're also on Podcast Addict, so don't forget that.
That's true, too. And you also have a Ko-Fi, which you kind of treat as your Patreon equivalent. People can support you there. There's also a producer tier.
Yeah, if you donate and want to keep donating at a $5 a month, we have physical rewards, stickers drawn by wife of the me, Ashlyn, who has done... And in fact, Michael Stearns mentioned earlier with the Sonic Twitter and also... did a question as G Silver. Sorry to dox you, Michael. he's also going to give some stickers, and then you can also just sort of dictate the topics of the show, or just hang out in the Patreon or hang out in the Discord server.
Nice. So there's nice. Some, yeah. And speaking rewards. Of stickers, too, there will be a SegaBits meetup at the Galloping Ghost Arcade, the largest arcade in the world, over 1,000 games. Home to Sega Sonic the Hedgehog Arcade, home to both of those hologram Sega machines that are very weird, home to a functioning, at this moment, I believe, R360, Galaxy Force 2, Thunderblade. They have everything. And so we're going to be doing that on October 25th. You can check out those details at SegaBits.com. You can Google search Arcade Adventure SegaBits. It's the most recent one. And if you go, you can get some free stickers, you know. So this is this year's. This is from Chelsea. She has done official art for Sega's social media accounts. It's Movie Amy Rose playing Sonic the Fighters. And if you don't mind, Grant, I will I'll get a little stack of these and I'll mail them over to you. So in your next little sticker, physical mailing, whatever, to your listeners at some of the higher tiers, you can include those. I would be happy
to. That would be awesome.
Spread the love.
Whoa.
Man, anything else?
Hope there's no customs on these portal taking gifts through portals.
No, I don't think so. We're in the same country, last I checked. But
well, you know,
this is Earth X, as I alluded to earlier. Unfortunately, so Satan does reign supreme here, and I know you don't like him, but sorry about that.
He is my rival. Yeah.
He is your rival. He's my rival too. But what's going to be going on the next episode of Sonic Weekly? I know you have it going to. It's going to record this week, correct? Can you give us a little tease?
We are finally stopping talking about Sonic Racing Crossroads. We'll have to cover it a little bit in the news, but we're going to do a hard turn, hard left turn to talk about Bonanza Brothers, the Genesis
game. Nice. That's the sound effect
that we're looking forward to. Nice. So that should be fun.
Oh, I love Bonanza Brothers. And are you also going to take a look at or talk about the puzzle and action games, which are kind of a spin-off to the Bonanza Brothers?
You'll have to listen and find out.
PlayStation 2 version of the puzzle and action collection for Hidden Secrets, and I found nothing. But I'm glad I looked.
Nice. Well, I want to thank you all for coming on. This will conclude the CrossPod. There will be no setup. There will be no post-credits scene. You all can sleep well tonight knowing that there will be no more ring portals. There will be no more talk of any of that. But and I'm not even going to bring it up and you know, screw you over and actually set up a part three. This is it. But I want to thank you all so much for coming on. It's been a lot of fun talking about Sonic the Hedgehog over these past few weeks. And I look forward to slipping back into listener mode and enjoying future episodes of Sonic Weekly every week. And you can check SegaBit Swing Report Show out probably 4 times a year. But hey, sometimes we do it every month, and I feel like we've actually been kind of on a roll. So I'll be back on this show in a month. We're also going to be having Sega Talk. The next episode is going to be covering the Sonic 8-bit game for both Game Gear and Master System. So that's going to be coming out for Patreon supporters next week. We also have Rystar dropping to our new episode. So thank you all again for joining us. Thank you everyone in the chat for watching and listening. And we'll see you next game on the SegaBits Swing and Report Show live. Later.
Thank you, Barry. Bye.
Bye. I love rice ball. Kaka get a nice ball. Yurel wild on the side of bam. 986 からの太鼓bam. 奥義の特権とパンチを武器に Freaky に戦う Pretty なプリンス今すぐスタートミラクルワールドありえせいから始めるゲーム熱い塊を吹っ飛ばして独自な道走るずっと増して1が攻撃で2がジャンプ他とは違う最新型サイクルにコプター操りバクソンじゃんけんでとどめだアクションでもおにぎり食っても世話の瓶けれどみんなはこういう背が欲しいアレックスゲアレックスゲ通称アレックスオンリーワンアレックスゲアレックスゲカッパトゥーティーアレクルーアレクルーここミラクルワールド最先端アレックスゲアレックスゲカッパトゥーティーまだまだまだまだまだまだ元気だまだまだ
をもはめるパターン。ボスの頭上に合わせる技、三つのスタイルを選んだ楽。掴み取る後出しはなしで勝つ。紙とハサミと石の格闘、舐めてじゃらけて日々を爆笑。かませば百獣なまさかのボンミス。人生にはないぜコンティニューとか言いつつ、ライフィズ金次第。裏技に通し開く未来、格好しなじゃんけん大魔王。アポシエハチありがとう。石化された人々にこの王冠かざし勝ちない祈りを。けどまだまだゲームは終わらない、この指が止まらないの。 Stop it!
アレックス家、アレックス家、通称